Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast special edition, and I'm here with your publisher, Kevin Longquist.
Stephen, good to be with you, fighting a cold and all, but we're going to make it.
And your managing editor, Jake Shaw.
I'm like Gary Batters and TCU. I'm just fighting fatigue. Otherwise, no cold.
Oh, okay. Well, we all know that Baylor did not make the Final Four in the college football playoffs, and I think Kevin, Jake, and I all have our rants prepared. If y'all don't mind, I'm going to start with mine, and I'll go ahead and say, hey, the Baylor fan base, man, be happy. This is the second time in the history of Baylor University they've won 11 games. They win their next game, most wins in any season of the program's history. They've got 40 wins in 4 years. That's never happened before. They beat TCU two straight. They beat Texas 4 out of 5. They beat Oklahoma 3 out of 4. They're back-to-back Big 12 champions. It's not that bad.
No.
They're playing in the Cotton Bowl against Michigan State. Get happy or get your ass out.
that's great. That's true, Stephen. Wise words from Mark Riles there. You know, you could tell he was upset when he let a supposed curse word fly. You know, I have never heard him say damn or hell or anything like that. Anything you know, you might hear another coach say. Maybe, you know, his religious beliefs, or maybe he respects Baylor's decorum. So for him to let, you know, or get your ass out fly today, don't you think, Stephen, that was a little out of character and showed that he was perturbed?
He's a football coach. I mean, when he's out there at practice or
on the
sidelines during a game, yeah, he's generally very careful in front of the camera. But you could also tell when you looked at that video that I'm not sure he went to bed last night.
Maybe not. I barely did.
Oh, that was one exciting game, too.
Yeah. So, my rant, I agree with everything you said, but look, we're recording this at 7:40 on Sunday night. You know, it's 7 hours almost on the dot, or 6 hours since it's been revealed. You know, of course, people are going to be upset right now. I think by tomorrow and throughout the week, people will, you know, quit talking about whether or not Baylor was jobbed. And they will embrace, and really, you know, if you're not going to make the playoff, this is almost best-case scenario. You know, you're going to play in a bowl game where you're going to have access to a ton of fans. I mean, Baylor should have 40,000 fans there, if not more. And you're playing a team that, look, I know the Big Ten is not looked at as a power conference, but Michigan State has earned a lot of respect these last few years. They're not a team that people will penalize Baylor for losing, say like they did last year with Central Florida. Baylor lost a lot of respect by losing that. I don't think that's going to – if Baylor loses to Michigan State, that's not going to happen. You know, their only losses are to Oregon and Ohio State. So this is a well-respected team. And I think eventually, Stephen, people will be happy. But I don't blame them for being upset right now, because if they didn't see it coming, they're going to be upset. My rant is – I called this shot on Monday or Tuesday. I can't remember what day I posted on the site, but I knew this was going to happen. It was set up perfectly last week for Ohio State to get a nice win in their eyes and jump teams, and then they solved the Baylor-TCU problem by ranking Baylor ahead of them, but not in the playoff. Obviously, it took Ohio State winning and Florida State winning too, but this is exactly what I spelled out on our site earlier in the week. I saw it coming. And anyway, I'm filibustering here, so let me go. Kevin, what's your rant?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, Stephen, I think you bring a lot of common sense to this. Personally, I think the Baylor fan base has the right to have the blues for 24 hours. And then after 24 hours, it's time to move on and get ready for the Spartans. You know, I think, Jake, at the time that you were posting it, I was tweeting it. I think we were talking about this on Wednesday, actually, because the ranking came out on Tuesday.
That's right.
And I really sat there and thought about this Wednesday morning, saying they can solve this Big 12 problem between TCU and Baylor by hoping that Ohio State beats Wisconsin. I don't think we were looking at 59-0 to do that. But the fact that when that score came in last night, regardless of what happened with Baylor's very solid win over a very, very good Kansas State team, and then TCU's, you know, thumping of Iowa State, I really thought that this was all the committee needed to do to just kind of wash its hands of this issue and say, we're done with this. We can slide Ohio State right into four and absolve ourselves of the problem, a problem which Commissioner Bob Bowlesby created by not at least presenting to the committee, saying that Baylor will be our representative, if you will, even though it's a coach, it's a recognized co-champion, but it would be our team that we would recommend to the committee. Not that the committee has to take it, let's keep that in mind, but they would be the team that the conference would put forth because they beat TCU 61-58. I think when Bob was on the Big 12 conference call on Monday and kind of just did not go in that direction, I think it really set a lot of people off, and he just set this thing up to where he gave the committee the out. Obviously the committee took advantage of it, made its decision. Baylor's left out, so is TCU. I think it's proper, at least, that Baylor is finishing ahead of TCU in the rankings. Obviously, the lessons that we need to take from this is that, one, perhaps Baylor needs to find a way to change its non-conference schedule if that's really going to be an issue here. I don't know if there's something that they can do to buy anybody out of their schedules. Starting with next year or moving forward, it's going to be really hard to do that because Ian McCall has said that they've moved, that they're kind of booked solid toward 2018. The Big 12 meetings in New York are going to be taking place early this week, so they're going to be perhaps talking about the Big 12 tiebreakers as well as the potential of moving into an 18 playoff format, which I think there was a poll recently that suggested that most of Division I college coaches want an 18 playoff. And I think we're going to probably, and because of what happened in this year, I think we're going to probably get that pretty soon, probably maybe by 2017. And so, you know, I'm disappointed, but at the same time, you know, but Baylor has an opportunity of redemption here, because let's remember that last year's Fiesta Bowl against Central Florida was nothing but a flat tire. Team did not play well. There was obviously the distraction with Bryles' name being connected to the Texas job, which didn't help in their focusing. And then I don't know if they even took Central Florida seriously because they weren't a name school. Well, Michigan State's a name school. Michigan State, as you mentioned, Jake, has lost two games, and that's to teams that are playing in the Final Four with Oregon and Ohio State. And really, I think that this is a game where Baylor can show a lot of redemption. It can play a very solid team out of the Big Ten. Probably, if you will, Michigan State and Ohio State are considered the two quote-unquote legit teams of that conference. So if you do that, and if you beat the Spartans, which are going to look a lot like Kansas State, by the way, if you do that, then I think that you've done exactly what you wanted to do. Look, the goal for this year for Baylor was obviously they wanted to get to the playoff. But the thing was that they wanted to get to a second consecutive Big 12 championship. And I think we need to not lose sight of that. It's really hard to win championships. It's really hard to go undefeated. It's really hard to win championships consecutive years. You know, the great programs over the years, like Alabama and Florida State and USC and so forth, they've been able to do that. I mean, Oklahoma has had a great run under Bob Stoops with like 8 conference championships in his, 16, 17 years up in Norman. So, you know, for Baylor to do this, let's not lose sight of the big picture here. This is a program that is still in its infancy of trying to get off the ground and make itself one of the better names in college football. This year is another step of that, where they are 11-1. They are playing in the Cotton Bowl against a very fine team. Look, this is number 5 against number 8 in the country. And if you can't get up for this game, then you don't deserve to be there. But I think Baylor will show up and play very hard, play a very good game that New Year's Day morning.
Yeah, I'm not worried about them not being motivated or focused, because they just have to look back 12 months to remember the last time what happened. And Michigan State, with all apologies to UCF, it's just the name alone is going to draw more respect than Florida did. So, yeah, I'm not worried about the focus. You know, you bring up Oklahoma. Yeah, it is typical. They're the only program until last night that had ever repeated as Big 12 champs. You know, that's pretty.
They did that in a split division. They didn't do it in a single format, did they?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know which one's harder. You know, maybe split is tougher because you have to win another game even after you, you know, won your division. I don't know. But basically, I'm saying not Texas, not Nebraska when they're in the conference, not Kansas State, anything they've done with Snyder, not Oklahoma State with Gundy. Only Baylor and Oklahoma have ever repeated as Big 12 champs. So, yeah, I agree. Obviously, a pragmatic look says, you know, it's an incredible season. I still think we are in that mourning period, and I think everybody has the right to vent. But one thing I want to talk about is this whole thing that the Big 12 needs a conference championship game. I think that is just the committee's excuse for putting Ohio State in. I really do. That one extra game does not absolve them of their poor play against Indiana, against Michigan, losing at home to a pretty average at best Virginia Tech team. They're using that as their excuse. Well, oh, they beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. You know, why does that suddenly matter when, you know, Alabama only needed to beat Missouri by a point to get in, you know, that they only needed to. Oregon would only have to needed to beat Arizona by a point to get in. Their conference championship games did not matter. For some reason, the only one that mattered was the one to Ohio State. And it shows that this committee each week has used selective either data or selective games, stuff that can be arbitrary, stuff that changes, to validate their decisions. And for Ohio State this week, it was winning the Big Ten championship game. If they would have won by one, I guarantee you they still get put in ahead of them. They wanted Ohio State to win. And I hate to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but, I mean, how else can you say? You look at the resumes stacked up against each other, Baylor's the superior. Better wins. The loss doesn't even compare.
Well,
not at all. I know West Virginia's 7-5, but, you know, four of their losses to her teams that are in the, you know, up until last week, the top 15, and then losing at Texas. It just doesn't compare. Baylor is being penalized for its non-conference schedule. That's simply put. That's where things have to change. One more thing. I think this thing is going to 8 teams. When that does, I don't begrudge Baylor if they play Lamar all 3 weeks. Because at that point, if you have 8 teams and your conference champ gets an automatic bid, who cares what you do in non-conference? Maybe you get seeded 7th instead of 3rd. But if you win your conference, a Power 5 conference, you're going to get in no matter what. So I don't want Baylor to overreact, and I don't want any program to overreact based on the first year of this system. It's in its infancy. This committee, these people can change. You can have new people come in with different views, and that's why it's all human driven right now, which is somewhat of a shame. But I think it's just too soon to make overreactions. But I do think in this 4-team format, you do have to increase your improve your non-conference schedule. I know McCaw said it's not going to happen, but they have to explore every opportunity to do so.
Okay, here's the thing, is that, number one, having Minnesota did not improve TCU's chances. The two teams that got left out were two small private schools. The committee picked who they wanted to pick, and then they came up with a justification for it. And that's why they said the criteria changed every week. The fact was they wanted Ohio State, so they picked Ohio State, and then they gave whatever reason they had to justify that decision. Okay, and so yep. I don't think the non-conference made that much difference this year. Could it? Yes, definitely, but it didn't help TCU. And you'll notice that one-loss teams, the only two that got left out were the two small private schools that don't get as big a TV ratings.
Yeah, it's and that also don't have big school advocates on the committee. You know, I mean, you look at your Big 12 representative; it's Oliver Luck. I mean, what kind of strong ties does he have to the Big 12? You know, I wouldn't say long-standing like a Barry Alvarez does. or you know, Ty Willingham. You know, I hate to go all conspiracy theory, but you're so right, Stephen. I mean, it's no coincidence that those are the two who are left out. And they had better resumes. I mean, Baylor and TCU's resumes probably can stand shoulder to shoulder with Alabama and Oregon. And that might be a homerism talking, but I really think it's true. That the Big 12 is the top rated conference in the United States of America, as Art Briles would say. If you go 8-1 in that conference, that's, to me, as good as going 7-1 in the SEC.
Well, if Northwestern had Ohio State's record, would they have gotten in?
Yeah, probably not. I don't know who gets in at that point. Then they're in a real conundrum, because which small school do we have to pick?
Yeah, if Texas had Baylor's record, would they get in?
If they're battling with Ohio State, I don't. That's a coin toss.
It's a coin toss. But and you know, at that point, it's going to happen in a year or two. Again, this is the very first year, and I know it's made the season exciting. Sure, of course it does. We finally got a playoff, but there has been a ton of controversy with this. And there's been a lot of criticism, and a lot of it justified. Not all of it is, you know, from Baylor's fan base either. So things are going to change. I mean, this was a step in the right direction, but it's not completed.
I think that these meetings, though, in New York, if they do talk about the Big 12 tiebreakers, I think, and I do anticipate that happening. That if they are going to discuss this, they are really going to have to define the criteria as to what is the. I mean, stand by it, I guess, for one, because that's my biggest problem with Bob Bowlsby here, is the fact that, you know, when you have your head-to-head as your first tiebreaker, it really should matter. And the fact that he didn't acknowledge it or follow through with that, and I know what he said on ESPN's. Final Four playoff selection show, talking about how he looked at the videotape of what he said back at Media Days in July and said he misspoke. Look, that's fine that he felt like he did that. I think he absolutely made it worse for himself than anything else. I think the genie's out of the bottle and he can't get it back. But the problem, to me, I think that really hurts his credibility even more. I think that the problem here is that he did not. The whole thing changed when he refused to say that we were going to pick the team if there was an 11-1 for both Baylor and TCU, that we were going to submit to the committee, again, not for their choosing, of course, but the team that won the head-to-head tiebreaker. It almost makes you think, Jake, to play on your conspiracy theory, or I like to go grassy knoll in this case, is did he really want to have TCU represent the conference instead of Baylor? I mean, I know that's a little bit of I know that's a little bit out there, but it almost kind of makes you feel that way just based on the fact that he was so non-committal about this. And quite frankly, I do not have a problem that following last night's bowl championship trophy presentation, where Art Briles kind of gave him what for, following when the mics were cut off and everything was breaking up, he had every right to be upset with him about that.
Yeah,
and
I'm curious, Stephen. I was in the stands. You're on the field. Were you anywhere near that? I mean, could you get a sense that there was, I guess, a lack of harmony down there? I mean, what could you see?
There was a lot of love on that field.
Okay.
It was just kind of, you know, Browns is pretty plain-spoken. He just kind of let him know that he felt like he'd been kind of abandoned.
He had been, yeah.
But
I'm curious if you were anywhere close to it and could see.
I wasn't able to hear the actual words between them. Just saw Bowlsby kind of waving, you know, kind of doing the shrudge thing with his arms, with a kind of real sheepish grin on his face.
Yeah,
I don't think he was wishing him Merry Christmas, to be honest with you. So
no. So what do y'all think about people calling for his job? I thought it was a little over the top, but then I'm starting to wonder. I mean, this guy failed one of his programs pretty miserably. So one, he didn't fulfill his duty as a commissioner. Two, more importantly, this is going to be an acrimonious relationship from here on out. Mm-hmm. And I think it could affect the relationship between Baylor and the Big 12. And I don't like the thought of that from either side. And, you know, I think maybe just for that reason alone, you know, it needs to be considered. I don't think it's going to happen. But I think there is a merit to saying he needs to be fired.
Yeah, I don't think so. You don't fire somebody for one mistake unless somebody loses a limb or dies because of that mistake.
I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure on Bob. I do think that Bowlesby will survive this somehow, but I think it's going to be a very tense relationship. There's going to be some really hard feelings between Baylor. And let's face it, there should be some hard feelings coming out of Fort Worth and TCU as well regarding this.
They won by 52 points. They gave up a field goal, and they dropped spots. I saw a stat. Look, I don't feel any sympathy for them. They shouldn't have been ahead of Baylor this long anyway. But I did see that they're the only team that dropped after winning, and it happened twice. I mean, gosh, how bad is this committee? I mean, how bad is it that Mississippi State doesn't play a game? Michigan State doesn't play a game, and those two swap spots.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I really don't, because I think everyone was kind of figuring that. Obviously, that once the decision was made that Baylor wasn't going to the Final Four, that they were obviously going to go to the Cotton Bowl, and they were going to probably get an SEC team, and that was probably going to be Mississippi State or Ole Miss.
Yeah,
and at least before those other rankings were released. And then when those were released, and then Mississippi State jumps Michigan State for reasons only known to the committee. But I guess, Jake, though, maybe what it is that we're talking about here is the fact that, you know, when Jeff Long, the committee chairman, talks about that every week they kind of reset the whole platform on this, and that every spot is up in the air, if you will, that nothing is guaranteed. I've heard him say that. I heard Bill Hancock, the former BCS chairman who's involved in the playoff committee, say the same thing, that nothing is a done deal every week, that nothing is locked in for the first week, although, you know, obviously common sense tells you that if these teams that were ranked 1 through 3 were going to win, that they were probably going to hang on to their spots, I mean, 3 meaning Florida State. Because the evidence is clear. Oklahoma was, 20? Lost to Oklahoma State, and that's another thing that hurt both Baylor and TCU, too, is the fact that the Sooners lost to Oklahoma State, and they fell out of the rankings. Minnesota, actually, who had fallen out the week before, came in at 25. Yeah. Boise State came in at, I think, 20, and they're going to the Fiesta Bowl against Arizona, which is great for them. I mean, that's one of those other schools' leagues. They get a spot in one of those New Year's Day 6 games. But maybe there is some credence to the fact that they really do mean what they say in terms of resetting this every week and that nothing is a done deal. Do I buy it? Partly, but not all the way. I still think the committee is going to have to look at the way it evaluates criteria. I also am still of the opinion that, you know, when you are doing something completely new, I'll use a line saying if there is to be a brave new world, this generation will have the toughest time living in it just because nobody knows how this is going to go, and you kind of have to feel your way through the first year. And so next year, I would expect the process to be far better streamlined, far better identified to get the four best teams or the four best teams in the tournament. Do we have the four best teams? Well, I know we have three, and then the four came down to splitting hairs between Ohio State, Baylor, and TCU, and the committee took Ohio State because of, in my opinion, what the Big 12 commissioner didn't do by fronting Baylor front and center.
Well, you know, I don't think it's so cut and dry that Oregon and Alabama's resumes were so much better. I mean, I think Oregon's is actually stronger than Alabama's. But I don't know. I just think people just concluded without even thinking it through that these were better. But more importantly, this release show needs to go away. It needs to die because if today we saw these rankings and it was the first time we'd seen rankings all year, right? I mean, the basketball committee doesn't do it. They have people who guess, and that's fine, but nobody gets upset at what's the bracketologist on? Joe Lunardi. Yeah, no one gets upset at him because he's wrong in a few cases because he's just guessing. This committee doesn't need to release things every week. It just set them up for more criticism because you have a team that wins by 52 points dropping three spots.
Right.
You know, it's nonsensical. And if these came out today, I'd be disappointed that Baylor wasn't in, but I wouldn't be claiming conspiracy. Not at all. But the way they have these rankings set up, it really reeks of it. So there are fixes. There are errors throughout this process, and they need to start fixing them. You know, beginning with next year's system.
The perfect illustration on the basketball committee, Jake, just to kind of talk about the disappointment, as brief as it would have been, was like in the case of SMU last year when everyone kind of penciled them into the tournament and they didn't make it, and there was that immediate upset. This for about a couple of hours, and then everybody moved on. With Baylor, because of the committee's rankings coming out every week, I think that just fueled it every single Tuesday. It gave every school that was participating in this process, who was being ranked, you know, wherever they were being ranked, a reason to be upset and to call flaws in the system. I realize though too that it's going to be hard to keep it off the air on a weekly basis because it's a ratings draw. It's a great conversation piece. People want to talk about this stuff, good and bad, you know, that sort of thing. And so that's the big picture that the networks, that ESPN is looking at here. So I don't know if you can get it off, if you can get the show off the air. I'm with you on that. I just don't know if you're going to get it, Jake. That's the only thing.
Yeah, I don't think they will because, come on, this is right in ESPN's wheelhouse. They love drama. They love anything not pertaining to games, frankly. They'd much rather have five guys sitting around talking about games than showing a game on TV. So, no, it's not going away, but it should be considered because it just reveals their ever-changing logic and their ever-changing explanations for why one team is better than another.
Well, my take on it is that you should not select the teams for the college football playoff the way that you figure out who won a figure skating competition.
Yeah.
At the start of the season, I don't care if you're Bowling Green, you should know if you do this, you will make it to the playoffs, and if you do this, you will win the championship. And you can't know that right now because there is no way, because they're voting only. They need a true playoff, and with the conference championship games, and I don't care if the Big 12 has to go out and you know bring in a couple more, but that gives you your first round of the playoffs right there. And until they go to a real playoff and the teams aren't voted in, you're going to have this kind of nonsense. And I don't care if they go to 64 teams.
Yeah. Well, why don't we talk real quickly here just so that before we get going here, guys, just talk a little bit about Michigan State. Obviously that the Spartans, as we mentioned a moment ago, where their two losses are to the two playoff teams, Oregon and Ohio State. It's a team that's very similar to Kansas State where they're going to try and run. Now, they're a little bit better running the football than Kansas State was this year. But, Mark D'Antonio, who's had a very solid career, he's actually transformed Michigan State into the school in the state of Michigan due to Michigan's failures here in recent years. 10-2 this year. Last year they won the Rose Bowl over Stanford. It's a very physical team, a strong defensive front that he usually puts on the field. He is a defensive coordinator in his background. He's got a pretty steady game manager in Connor Cook, who doesn't have a great completion percentage, about 58%. He's only Michigan State is one of those grinded out type of football teams where they don't want to beat themselves a la Kansas State. The one issue, though, that Michigan State has had this year in their two losses is the fact that their secondary has had some issues. Ohio State burned them on a lot of deep balls. Oregon did the reason why Oregon came back and won back in September was because there were some breakdowns in Michigan State's secondary. So that's the weak link.
Yeah,
you would
yeah.
suppose that because of that would play right into Baylor's hands, and I would think so too. So I think the question is going to be just the early read of this game is – what can Baylor's offensive line do against Michigan State's front? And I think the question we'll obviously have to check as we get closer is, there was a chance that when Desmond Hillier went out with the wrist injury, that there was maybe an outside chance that Baylor thought he could be back for postseason play. We'll see as we get closer where that stands. Yeah. Obviously, with Troy Baker, he's done. But there have been some up and downs with the right side of that offensive line. They were okay last night. I thought they were decent. I mean, there were a couple of times they gave up. You know, the two sacks against Bryce in the second half, you know, were obviously damaging. That killed the possession. But at the same time, if the front for Michigan State gets consistent pressure on Bryce, then Michigan State's going to be in this. If the offensive line can hold its own, then I think Baylor can win this thing pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I can't comment too much. I know I've watched them here and there this year, but I never watched the game start to finish. That's something I'll do, and on SickhamSports.com, I'll give my amateur breakdown of them. I did that last year with UCF, and that's when I started getting worried about the game because I thought UCF was a lot better team than I realized. I still didn't expect what happened. I didn't expect anything to happen, what actually happened, but I can't comment too much on them. But my worries going in, once again, are the focus. I'm not as worried about that now because they have that bad experience, the bad taste in their mouths from that and can learn from that. And two, not much routine changes when your bowl game's an hour and a half away from home.
No.
This is almost like going up to, you know, I mean, they've already done that this year. They have
the played Tech.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. So the focus is not as much as my concern with the team. The biggest concern I have is just how physical Michigan State is.
Mm-hmm.
I think Baylor's gotten much more physical under Art Briles, but still, it's just a very physical team, and you know, it'll come down to the offensive line really making their blocks and giving Petty time and opening holes for the running game. So it'll be, I think, you said Kansas State. I think they're better in some areas and worse than others in Kansas State, but that's easily the closest thing to Michigan State that Baylor has played this year.
I think with Michigan State, Jake, I watched them pretty intently in that Oregon game. And their speed was not too bad. Obviously, Oregon's got incredible speed, and so they're eventually – and that's partly the reason why they won. But, I mean, the problem with the Big Ten over the years has been, from my perspective, has been the reason why the Big Ten usually runs into a lot of trouble in these bowl games is the fact that it doesn't have that second-tier speed, if you will, or second-level speed at the linebacker spot. So when you get game – when plays are made out and open in space – they're going to have a real problem with it. The advantage that Michigan State had with Stanford was that Stanford was a very grinded out, two tight end, power eye formation that Michigan State that fed into what Michigan State likes to do. That was a great matchup for them. I don't think this is a very good matchup for Michigan State if the defensive line can't get consistent pressure on Bryce Petty. So having said that, and then also at the same time, I think too for Connor Cook for Michigan State, he's a pretty heady kid. He's got a couple of decent wide receivers. They got a 1,000-yard rusher. You know, they didn't play terrible against Ohio State. They just gave up so many darn big plays when JT Barrett, was going on. And in fact, that was the game. That game against Ohio State was actually played the same day, November 8th, when Baylor won in Norman, and that game was played at night. So, you know, it's a good matchup. It's a very intriguing matchup. And I'm just going to say this. Baylor cannot overlook the Spartans. I don't think they will, but this is a really good team. It's a very intriguing matchup because you got such contrast in styles.
Well, I don't think there's any way Baylor overlooks them. I think they're still embarrassed about last year's performance in the Fiesta Bowl. You guys saw Ark's press conference today. He looked like he wanted to choke somebody. And I think they're going to take it out on Michigan State. I agree with y'all. Now, the only full game I've seen of Michigan State was the Ohio State game. That's probably their worst game they played all year. Baylor has never seemed to have a whole lot of trouble with that type of offense. And normally, if somebody's going to beat Baylor, they're going to beat them because they'll expose them in the defensive secondary. And I don't think Michigan State can do that.
I think this should pretty much wrap it up. I think the overall sentiment is that, you know, I was there. I got there on Friday night, went to the stadium. I talked to dozens of students who were camping out. I talked to one guy. He got there Thursday at 6 o'clock at night. to get his spot in line for game day. I mean, you wouldn't believe there was a tent city. There were hundreds of kids sleeping in tents. Some were doing homework. Some were playing card games or whatever, just hanging out. That was just the start of it. I got there at 7:45 Saturday morning and was there until nearly midnight. And the entire time, there was just an incredibly festive atmosphere. And that comes when you're winning games like Baylor does. So, yeah, overall, this program is in as good a shape as almost every other school in the country. You know, they're going back to a great bowl game. They're back-to-back conference champs. Overall sentiment is that this program is in great shape, and they've accomplished history, and the upward trajectory is still there. This team can get better. But there is disappointment in being left out, especially the way they were left out. So you can't ignore that, just like you can't ignore how successful this year has been.
Yep. Couldn't have said it better myself.
That sounds like the right way to close it.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad we did this special edition, and then obviously we'll be back Thursday, kind of do an overall season recap, maybe even talk a little more basketball than usual, huh?
Maybe we ought to mention that Kansas State game. That was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
Yeah,
by the way, too, and then don't forget the Baylor the recruiting is going to hit the high tail. I mean, this is going to be a pretty fast-paced 2 months. We get a dead period coming up here for a couple weeks because of the holidays and so forth. But this is the week where Baylor coaches are getting on the road to look at recruits, evaluate more, maybe send some offers to some 2016, 17 kids, things like that. And then there will be lots to talk about on Thursday regarding recruiting.
Great, okay. Great. Well,
see you then.
Thanks for listening.
Appreciate it. The Sikkim Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Rivals or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.